Happy tax day, everybody. It's Scott Catoon from Technori sitting here talking with the folks from Dabbler, Jake Obremski and Neil Glazier. Before I get into the conversation with you guys and talk more about Dabbler, it's one of those things that it works well for me because we're in the process right now of moving out of our co-working space and trying to find, you know, permanent space, so to speak. And I don't know if you can tell, but we have a show and it's kind of a big part of what we do. So we just had a meeting with the guys thinking, like, how would we build out our own studio? And we did so once before at Tech Nexus. But the issue that I have come into is, one time, knowing how to do it, like, obviously it would be helpful, although there's plenty of like YouTube videos on like what you need. But if we wanted to build like a platform and stage, I don't know if you can tell just by looking at me, but I'm not like the handiest guy. Like, I can figure it out, but I'm not probably so handy as to like go to Home Depot, buy all the wood and nail it all together. I can say I can do that, but the reality is someone's going to fall through it is probably what's going to happen. So that led me to think, like, why not talk to guys like you guys on Dabbler who've created a marketplace for me to find anyone to do more or less anything.
Yeah.
And that's probably leaving you guys somewhat short on what Dabbler actually does and how it goes into it. But I figured we'll have Jake here tell us exactly what Dabbler is and then maybe move on and learn a little bit about both of you guys and what got you to this point and where Dabbler is in the spectrum of startup.
Wait a minute, wait a turn minute. On the radio. Turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play
it's
it though.
Time to play it
I
though,
hope
right.
you got in tune.
Got
he
in
talking
tune.
Bigger business. Talking he make business. A lot of moves.
Lot of
he
moves.
Talking Scott Catoon. I'm saying wait a
so
minute.
So Jake, take it away.
Yeah, totally. So everyone's got that to-do list, their weekly to-do list. And
honey-do.
Those everyday tasks, like you just said. And Dabbler is a marketplace for people to outsource that kind of stuff. So everyday chores and tasks. Stuff, you know, very simple, like cleaning, moving, handyman stuff, but also your everyday odd job, you know, like you said, pretty much anything within reason, you know. It's pretty much people go on the app, they say what they need done, so move boxes. They can pick how much they want to pay. So they say, I'd want someone for $50. Say when and where they need it, a brief description, and then they post it. And then people in their area who are signed up to work through the platform then get a notification of the new job that's available. They can chat right in the app.
So like in a lot of ways, it's like a cleaned up version of Craigslist where I'm not going to get an ad to like, do I want to join a swinger club or
right,
something?
Yeah, yeah.
Not that
exactly,
I wouldn't, but
yeah.
I'm just like, at this current juncture, I don't believe that's my scene.
All that stuff out.
Right? Yeah.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have, like, and that this probably goes into like the conversation of how you guys, why you found this, because as you know from on this show and on the Technori stage, like you've had like Shift Gig and,
yeah,
and
totally. Yeah.
I'm forgetting, there's another, like, it's not ShipBob, but it's like another kind of thing where they fill this market, but they, like, this is such a vast market and the needs are so kind of unique. Like, you could have a marketplace that's just for like really high tech construction, for example. Got to have licenses and certain things. Like, you can do that. Shift Gig is great for like large jobs and numbers of people to fill the role. But I still think that there's like Angie's List and things that you can go to find a person who works somewhere. But there's a big gap between Craigslist, which, as I mentioned before, is rife with problems.
Yeah.
I mean, some, like, at this point, honestly, like, I don't know if I'd go on Craigslist if I'd actually want that person in my home. Like, I don't even know. I don't know. It's just like there's too much crazy shit going on Craigslist at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So between Craigslist and professional vendors, there still isn't a real marketplace out there that's good for the average, like for a handyman, for people who have skills that are not, I'm not a licensed electrician, so I can't do that. Maybe I am, and I can do that, and here's my license. But like, there's no real place for let's pretend for a second I was handy, for me to go ahead and actually do side gig work. Like,
totally,
so this
is
it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's exactly the problem that we set out to solve. Like you said, Craigslist is very sketchy, and there's stuff that
yes.
shouldn't be on there. And, you know, we filter all that out. And everything else is, you know, really professional, or at least professional prices. And that was the problem we set out to solve, was people who have skills that they don't use in their day-to-day job, right? Stuff that, like you said, it's just, I'm just handy, right? My dad taught me how to do whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't do it for a living. This is the place where you can go and make some extra cash using those skills.
So before we go into how the whole thing works, you know, what is your story to get to this point? Like, what was it? I mean, obviously, you just told me what you were looking to solve. But, like, personally, how did you come to this? Like, where were you guys at before this?
Sure. So we had a friend in high school who, you know, went door to door selling his
Bibles.
Services of, you know, he was a lawnmower, right? So he'd go to his neighbor's house and mow lawns. And that's what we were doing. We were working part time. You know, I worked at a fast food restaurant. He worked at a movie theater. And so we kind of saw that, you know, there's this need for these menial types of jobs that our friends who are, you know, 16, 17 years old we're doing.
How old are you guys now? Because you both look like babies.
We're 19.
Yeah, we're 19.
So yeah, you're babies. Okay, sweet. Normally we drink on this show, but in this particular case, we would do it without the camera.
There you go. Yeah, we'll come back in 2 years.
Yes, 2 years. Wink, wink. No. So continue. Sorry, I disappear in sidebar.
Yeah. So our friend was going door to door and you know selling his services and you know we found that maybe there's a way of connecting these homeowners who have these everyday, you know, menial stuff that isn't professionally priced, and we can connect them to, you know, amateurs or really anybody who wants to sign up and work through our platform. And that's really where we got the ball rolling. We started out where we were, way out in the western suburbs.
We're about, I'm a Glen Ellyn guy, so yeah. I live in Glen Ellyn now.
Yeah. We're in the Naperville, Geneva area. Okay, yeah. So pretty, but even farther west than that, actually.
Yeah.
So not a very populated area. We were basically connecting our friends with small jobs in our community, and actually started out just basically with a email form, and we get an email and we text our friends, 20 of our friends who we trusted to go out and mow someone's lawn and connect them that way, and everything was cash. And so from there we really built out the product. Yeah. and I've been iterating on it since then.
So what takes you from, okay, I've got this thing that I'm going to like try to take a little bit, I'm going to put all my friends to work essentially, which is actually funny. It reminds me of a goofy story that I'll share just for no apparent reason. I have a friend, John Lewis, and this is going to sound absolutely terrible. I haven't talked to John in a long time, and this probably is why. So I had this, my parents were pretty solid. Like when I was in high school, I played sports and stuff. So I always had this like agreement, like if you're not in season or you're not practicing or whatever, like then you have to work. So I'd work at the golf course, which I didn't actually work. I would just golf all day and say I was working there. I'd caddy, but I was actually just golfing. Anyway, I had a buddy of mine who would do just about anything for a dollar. Mm-hmm. And I had worked out this deal with my parents where I was like, well, I can't work because I'm practicing for sports or whatever. And they'd be like, oh, you can mow the lawn. We'll pay you like $20. So then I went and got my friend John. I was like, hey, if you mow my parents' lawn, I'll pay you like $10-$12. And he signs up for it right away. So like literally I'm having him mow the lawn like every week. Like I'm like, you know, we want to make sure we have the lawn looking great, guys. Like we don't want to look like, you know, trash or anything. Yeah. So every week he's coming. I was making like $10 a mow. And then finally one day my mom's like, why is John Lewis always mowing her lawn? I was like, well, he's kind of stupid, and I got a great deal.
Yeah.
So I had the same idea, just not the fortitude to actually turn it into a company.
Yeah.
So moving over to Jake on this, like, where does the tech come into it? Where do you take this from an idea that was, like, obviously working, and it worked in quote-unquote simulation mode, but now we've got to get it to, like, a product?
Yeah. So like he said, like Neil said, it started with a GoDaddy website with an email form. You know, people would say, I need this done, you know, like what I said earlier. And we would get an email and we would text our friends. Obviously, that wasn't scalable. So we decided to, at one point, we decided to try and raise money. It was kind of poor advice from someone we had received. You know, we had nothing but that.
And, yeah.
You know, so to go and raise money at that point, you know, we had no idea what we were doing. We didn't know what, you know, what a pitch deck was, yeah. Right? So we were like, okay, let's go raise money so we can have an app built.
Yeah.
Obviously, that didn't go very well at the time.
Where did you go to? I'm just curious. Where did you go to try to raise money? Just like friends and family type of stuff? Or did you
we didn't even do that.
We just went straight into the institution. We called the Pritzker Group. We're like, hey, JB, you and Tony want to spot me some scratch?
We, you know, to be honest, we were kind of told that we would get some introductions. That never happened. And, you know, it was the classic mistake. You know, we just kind of followed what they were saying, right? It was, you know, looking back on it now, we feel foolish.
Yeah, it's always a good story, though.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And at 19, if that's where you're foolish, then you're doing all right.
Yeah, it was actually 17 at
17,
the time.
17, even so. Worse. At 17, if the most foolish thing was that someone told me to go ask for money and I didn't know how to do it. That was my big mistake. I'd be in a lot better spot right now.
Yeah. So when we finally realized that wasn't going to happen, we basically sat down and said, all right, we got to do this ourselves. I remember, you know, an all-nighter, we just YouTube, Google, how to build an app. I took care of Android. He did iOS, and we learned how to build the apps ourselves.
Wow.
Now he's the CTO of the company, so I don't do it anymore. He handles both. But yeah, within
he's like, yeah, well, I had to redo all of your shit.
Yeah. So that's exactly right.
Yep. He actually did. Yeah. 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 You know, so, you know, after doing
steep
that
learning curve,
after 5 to 6 months, we had, two somewhat workable apps, release those and then kind of proved our concept again with an app in, where we're from. And, from there, we just kind of operated where we were, you know, working out the kinks And just, you know, 2 months ago, we actually did our beta here in Chicago.
How's it going?
Very well. Very well. We did our beta. We did our beta here for a month or so. We found some kinks that we needed to work out. And then for the past month, he's been focusing on doing that kind of stuff. And we are just now relaunching to hiring to the entire city. For the beta, we kind of just focused on a few northern neighborhoods.
Yep. So, I mean, Neil, tell me a little bit about like some of the kinks and things that worked out that you maybe didn't expect and how mm-hmm. it went and sort of what you've learned just the beta process. Like, to be honest, like you say you made those mistakes on the front end of it trying to raise capital, but reality is we talk to startups all day long now who, like, I don't know if you saw the report recently, but the average age of a founder right now is 41.9 years old. That's the actual average age of a founder. Wow. So it's not as young as you would think. Mm-hmm. And most of them do not beta things and they do not do user testing until way later. They just like, yeah. I mean, yeah, they simulate like you guys did to start. So yeah, you do get organic feedback, mm-hmm. but they don't actually set it up in waves so that they can mm-hmm. control it and actually make, you know, make the product controlled better. So you guys are ahead of the curve in that. So what were some of the things that, you know, you did to set up that you were trying to learn, and then what did you find?
Yeah, so when we first launched in Chicago, we had a pretty rough version, and one of the things we were trying to work on was our business model. So when we started, it was all cash, and we wanted to convert that all to electronic payment. And so once we did that, it was basically PayPal within our app.
Yep.
And we found that that was still really easy to go around, and we had no way, people weren't being accepted, so we didn't know who was doing the jobs. And we found that, okay, there's so many loopholes here that, you know, just because we have this business model in place where we're taking a cut of each transaction, people can still go around it and pay however they want, whether it's check, cash, yeah. whatever.
That's always been the problem with a lot of these marketplaces, though, is, and I hope you figured out the way, like, Stripe mm-hmm. seems to have some pieces that maybe help a little bit, but like in general, you know, especially in this space, you're going to find, and that's honestly, that's one of the reasons I think Craigslist turned into like a porn hub, because you start working on Craigslist stuff and it's like, I'm just going to peruse and look for opportunities and reach out to people. Mm-hmm. And then once I get there, I'm like, hey, we'll negotiate, you know, OBO, everything ends OBO. And then yeah. when you get there, it's like, oh, I'll give you $50 instead of the $100 I was going to pay you. And it's like, mm-hmm. but it's cash. Like,
right.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
So Craigslist can't, you know, vet that out and have any guarantee of any sort.
Correct.
So now that we have this, so we relaunched, we built out the platform so where people would apply for the job instead of just inquiring like you would on Craigslist. Yep. So they accept these people and then they can, we know who's actually going to go out and do the job, when they're doing it, where they're doing it. So we have all that information so we can guarantee if something goes wrong, we know how much you were going to pay. We can refund you or send out another person to yep. do it for you. So a little more security on the hiring end there.
And screen for swingers.
Yeah.
Which is important.
Right.
Yeah. And in the meantime, we were also working on a much stricter vetting system for workers, since as we scale, we wanted to make sure that every single applicant, every single person that was approved to work would actually do a good job, be reliable.
Yep.
So we built out a screening system, so where we background check every single worker. And then we actually make them apply by answering several questions where we can kind of get a quality of character assessment on each applicant. We approve every single person manually and reach out to them manually right now. So we've been doing that for about a week or so, probably 2 weeks, approving partners, and that's been going really well. But that was one thing. We didn't want to just build an entire system and then launch it and then have to rebuild everything right away.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we iterated upon it and started out with just the bare minimum and got user feedback and fixed it along the way. So
I think it's interesting, it's valuable, and I love the approach you're taking, actually, because obviously, you know, like, we talk to a lot of companies, and one of the areas that I try to tell a lot of these companies, especially if they're younger guys who haven't done this before, it's like, if you could pick, and money not the question, if you could pick sort of your metaphorical board of directors, team, product, like the dream scenario, and I look at you and think of, like, this is maybe doesn't sound elegant at first, but if you think about it, like Spot Heroes app. Now, granted, mm-hmm. Mark has spent like $30 million on it, so, like, you know, let's be reasonable. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's on their team, but the app itself, if you imagined what are the, doesn't matter what the job task is, okay, let's assume that 70% of all the jobs that are going to be, the gigs are going to be taking place on this app are going to look like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. These are like mm-hmm. main five. If you had a stagnant registration format to where every single person uploads a photograph, up links in with their portfolio of work, whether it's LinkedIn or whatever the, you know, whatever common things there are for people for gig stuff, somewhat of a bio, and then proficiencies, like in the example of Spot Hero, they've got like EV charging, roof, indoor, outdoor, blah, 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 blah. So that every single person who is the potential worker has like a rating system. So basically, like, you know, when you see them, like, they are proficient in all these things, so I can have them do any number of things. And then essentially the people who are going on the site are actually looking, they're posting jobs that they want done, but they're actually looking at individuals rather than two people who are just trying to find each other in passing. Right. Mm-hmm. That might be a way for you guys to eliminate all the needed individual work, because you basically put the onus on the person who needs a job, not the person who needs the work, but the person who needs a job done, to go on there like, oh, there's 50,000 people on this platform that are doing gig work every day, and they can look at it right there and be like, yep, 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 yep. And if the job goes well, they click follow up with a 5-star rating, rate me, and it's there. And then the person sort of elevates up the charts as the ratings go up. Mm-hmm. And that way you guys aren't having to like hand walk the deal between each other. Because the one challenge we found with a couple of different apps that are similar to this, but not in this space, one was like very specific to haircuts and massage, is that, and the company is doing well now. They actually just won a Chicago Innovation Award this past year. So they've turned it around. But the initial problem they had was, they had the same problems you guys did getting started. So like that was, it is what it is, like that's startup troubles. Once they got past, as you, Jake, said, like you have your beta here, they get to the next round, they have like the whole city. So they're doing it for like 3 months. It took off really well at first. And where it started to collapse is they went crazy trying to weed out people who gave shitty haircuts or bad massages or whatever, and then on the other side, weeding out people who didn't pay and didn't tip. Mm-hmm. And they ended up just copying the Uber model of rate the customer privately, rate the performer, however you want to look at it. And so does Spot Hero. So like a person has a bunch of no-shows or late whatever, they get booted. And if the spaces continually don't have 3, 4, 5-star ratings, they get kicked out of the Spot Hero system too. If you guys do something like that over time here, where you start, you may simulate now, but you've got to have a mind on raising capital to build the app so that the app contains a lot of that work. Because what you guys are going to run into is over time, you're going to end up bumping into this thing where it's like, well, Jesus, we have to hire like 60 people to manage relationships.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Rather than just saying, listen, if you're a great worker, like this is the place to get 5-star workers. Like if you could achieve that marketing line of this is the place for 5-star workers, everyone in our system is a 5-star worker because we weed out everybody else. Mm-hmm. Anytime they can all sign up, but if they don't perform, they get weeded out.
Right.
Total rant for you, but nonetheless, like might be, I don't know if that's a direction you guys have thought about or where you are in the whole thing.
Yeah, we actually do something similar now. Is kind of like you said, that Uber model where if you go below a certain rating on Uber, I think it's like 4.5 or something along those lines. If you go below that, they just kick you off. We do pretty much the same thing. If you go below 4 stars, we're going to kick you off. You know, if we receive a certain complaint about you, we're going to kick you off. We kind of take pride in how strict we are with our vetting process, because it was a problem we ran into, you know, in the western suburbs where we're from, is people aren't doing good
lazy
jobs.
Ass they're, people yeah, in the western not, burbs, man.
They're not showing up. People aren't paying
players.
The full amount, you know. And it kind of opened our eyes and said, okay, our best friends did good jobs because they respected us.
There was accountability,
us.
Yeah.
Yeah, they knew that if they didn't do a good job, the hire was going to contact us, and we'd be like, dude, what's going on? That's not the case with strangers.
Yeah.
And that was when we decided, okay, we got to have, you know, the vetting. We got to have the application process. We got to have a certain, you know, you got to have a certain rating to stay on. You can't, you know, do certain things, that kind of thing.
So from this standout, like right now, how are you guys vetting the individuals that come in? You said you like hand vet them. Like what are you looking for?
So we put them through several questions on an application, trying to get to know them. So just about themselves, where they went to school, what experience they have, when they intend on taking, what kind of jobs they intend on taking. And then we put them through some scenarios of, you know, if this happens, then what would you do? And we found we can get a lot from just that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And it's worked pretty well so far, and we can see how, you know, how high quality they are. And then from there, the applications that we approve, we put them through the background check to make sure they're, you know, not a criminal or anything. And
you guys using like transnational or trans whatever it is here in Chicago that does the background stuff?
We use Sterling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
very cool.
It's worked well. Yeah. So, and then if their screening comes back clear, then approve them, and then can start accepting stuff.
So on the monetization side, what are the things that you're looking at? What are the things you're not looking at? From the standpoint of, like, obviously transactional, I get that, but mm-hmm. you've got a marketplace, so clearly you can right. push product, you can do all kinds of stuff. Are you guys looking that far in advance, or is that something you're, you know, what? Because at some point here, you're going to want to have to expand. I guess it's not even that. You're going to have to expand some of the revenue model because, let's assume you're just in Chicago for now. Mm-hmm. As you grow, that will change. But in Chicago, simply based on seasons, work is going to be like this.
Yeah, definitely. Totally.
So you've got to have sort of like a regular flow of, like, you know, name, you know, I was going to say Sears Hardware, but I think that's probably done. DeWalt, for example, you could run ads for and say, like, you know, construction gigs and stuff. Mm. People who click on that tend to get DeWalt ads. Mm-hmm. Like, are you looking at that, or, you know, is it just simply right now just transactional?
Well, we've looked at a lot of independently paid features, you know, just as yeah. a start, and tried to experiment with that. So, for example, once we have several, you know, a lot of partners or providers on the platform competing with each other, we found that, okay, maybe if they want to appear top at the at yep. the search list, you know, they pay an extra $1.99 or something, you know. Yep. So stuff like that we've definitely collaborated on, and it's something we do plan on implementing in the future. And then right now our core business model is just a transaction fee on each transaction that goes through.
I mean, my advice on that, like, honestly, not that it's going to be worth much on this side, but I think the only warning I would give you on the paid placement, because there's certain things where, like, that works well, like a lot mm-hmm. of, you know, like candidacy for hire, which this is technically, mm-hmm. But it's not like recruiter model per se. So, like, a recruiter model, I get being like, hey, if you put a you know, a circle around my face and make me stand out more, it's worth mm-hmm. more. They might click on me first.
Right.
But in your model, what is going to matter the most? Again, there will always be people. If you build a brand around this and you market it, you'll be able to get people to sign up for gigs forever.
Right.
There will never be a shortage of people who are signing up to make money. That's, like, forever.
Right, yeah.
What your challenge is, your most important sign up, is actually customers who want to have work done from your people. And so you're branding it out that you have the best people working for you, the most competent, highest scores. You sort of punch yourself in the face when you charge the worker to come in and be able to get to the front of the line. Because what happens if the number one top search result person turns into shitty job? Yes, you will boot them and they'll score will go down, but the person on the other end, your most important customer, the most expensive conversion mm-hmm. is going to go, I bought the number one guy because you said that was the number one guy and he was crap.
Right.
Right. So, like, there's certain things you got to think about where I think personally I would try to make, and we do the same thing with Technoria. This model is not very, it's actually very similar. Mm-hmm. We're matching, investors are finding companies that come through us, right? Mm-hmm. So there's always a shit ton of rich people who want to throw their money and stuff. It's, can you find companies who are the right company with the right offer to come in, right? And be a good value prop. So, like, for us, if we were to say, hey, we're going to charge a startup to make sure they get on stage, and the investor's like, I came to this thing and you got like three companies are pieces of shit and the other two are good. Mm-hmm. This is the number one showcase. Why would I come here? So we try to do is find sponsors and partners who bring sort of a side help in. So people are going to go, you know what? That's valuable. So, like, if you were to say, for example, I'm going to use the construction model again, just not, I don't mean out there construction, but like in my home.
Yeah.
Handyman model. So if I was to say to you, you know, like, here's an ad, like, here's the list of people who are able to do the gigs that I'm looking for. And then the people who clicked on the interest in at-home jobs they're looking for is, like, homework, you know, gardening, whatever. They click on things so you know who's on your site. If you sent them ads, it's basically, like, if you bought this at Menards, if you bought your stuff at Menards, here's a 10% discount card courtesy of Menards. Mm-hmm. If you got Menards to pay you to get in front of people, to be the place that the handyman buys the stuff at, they would give you the money and give a discount back to your users and not piss in the water, so that on one side or the other, you've got somebody who's feeling like, this isn't, like, I just don't feel like you put me in touch with the right person. So what I would really focus on, this is just my two cents, what I would focus on with this marketplace is making sure that the candidates, because there's thousands of them, are marketed to find the site to get on it, that they all have the exact same onboarding selection board, so everything looks identical, so that me, the person looking to hire someone for a gig, I can just go, maybe it's like Upwork, like yes, no, and like ranks them and then let their ratings speak for themselves over time. Once you have this onboarded across the platform, it ranks, then you can go city to city to city. And if you have national sponsors, doesn't matter what city you're in, Menards is everywhere, Walgreens is everywhere, like all these places are all the place. You get the sponsors in, and they know not only are they getting a little bit of the gig worker himself coming to Menards, therefore becoming more of a Menards user, but a person who does at-home work, who doesn't know what the hell they're doing, clearly, because otherwise they would do it themselves, would be like, oh, Menards, boom.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And so, and that way you've actually given a benefit to everybody. That's where I would take this for the for me, at least the next activation would be that one. And then you could probably go from there and create other kind of, you could probably start doing a recruiter model after that, where you give the gig worker the ability to get maybe insight into jobs first. So maybe they get the first chance to pitch themselves.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know, but my two cents. I've just seen a lot of marketplace things. Like, I think there's a lot of potential here. It's just how you guys take it from here to the next stage, to the next stage.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You know, I like the idea, and then you know, honestly, we just haven't thought that far ahead. Like you said earlier, right now it's been all growth.
Well, yeah, get the people on first. I can sit here and bullshit all day long. You guys have to do the work.
Right, you know, it's been, you know, do people even have an interest in using it?
I think they do. I personally do. Like, I'm a person who, we haven't just lately, but I use it, like, I use Upwork for work stuff.
Yeah.
To me, this is the exact same thing as Upwork, but it's for home, it's for gig stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly, and even even the Upwork stuff could be on here, but I think you, because of the existence of things like Upwork, you want to really hammer home on the gig economy, but I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of competitors out there, you know, but they haven't done it.
Nobody's
right,
got it right
in our eyes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Too expensive, too unreliable. You know, and one of the things that we pride ourselves on, that we say every single day, is you can get pretty much anything. You know, earlier we said within reason, done on Dabbler. That's not the case with the other platforms.
Yeah, and I would say again, like the ancillary income becomes really important, because a competitive advantage you could have if you did it right is, let's say, Menards, as an example, not that we want the sponsor with Menards, but I wouldn't mind it. if Menards was putting some money towards you, you could reduce the fee that you're taking from the gig worker themselves, and therefore be the way to get all the best workers to you. Is like, hey, we don't, you know, you guys are doing all the work, so we're only going to take, I don't know what you take, but let's say 2%, 5%. It's probably 10 or 12 or whatever, but like, we're only going to take 2 or 10%. 2-5%, whatever, because we are getting other income in, and then once you're just a massive behemoth and you raise a bunch of money the real way, then you can raise the price on them. Screw them.
Yeah,
business is business. It's a capitalist country.
Yeah,
but very cool. This is awesome. I appreciate you guys taking the time and coming in.
Yeah, thank you,
Jake. Neil,
thanks.
Great work. I got to tell you, I would not hang your head on the embarrassment of the story of trying to raise money. I think it's actually a great story of just like two dudes trying to figure this out, and someone tells them, and it's like, most people are full of shit until the money's in your hand. So it is what it is. It's going to happen again. What I would hang your hat on is the fact that you two decided you were going to do this, and the fact that there was a bunch of barriers and obstacles didn't matter. When we look at companies we want to bring in and invest in, what I look at is what I call force of nature. Founders become force of nature. When I see a founder who comes in and can work around all the problems, and it's like, yep, don't care, we're going to go on Lynda and just learn how to code and whatever, that's awesome. So like, you guys should really be proud of just that alone. And no matter what happens with Dabbler, like, you probably, I don't know if you guys are going to college or not going to college, but you're probably not going to need it. because when you're done with Dabbler, whether it's a success or not, there's going to be somebody else out there that wants exactly that. So don't wait, you know, put your money in Dabbler, not in fucking ISU or something.
There you go.
That's what we've been doing. Yeah.
Good call. I like it.
Thank you.
Congratulations on all the success. Where do people go to download the app and test it out? And what neighborhoods, one more time, are you working in?
Yeah, totally. It's available on iOS and Android. We're in almost all the city of Chicago.
And that's Dabblr.
Still. Yes, correct.
It's, the website is www.dabblerapp.com.
Okay. Yep. Very cool. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Awesome. Thank
you.
Thanks.
Yep. You can catch this episode of more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected. Following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori. You can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.